Welcome to the Smarter, Wealthier podcast, presented by Jags Mechanical, with your host, Spencer Dillinger, and co-host, Gabe Rogers. And here they are.
All right, welcome to the Smarter and Wealthier podcast. This is episode one. Today we're going to be talking about trades versus college. So I have Gabe Rogers joining me here today, and we are going to talk about our experience in the trades and some stats from some reputable national websites. So, Gabe, what are your thoughts on college and the trades?
You know, it's kind of funny. This week I did a Vistage presentation. I hosted the my Vistage meeting, and one of the things I talked about this week was how I even got started in the trades, like what made me want to do how I started getting into the trades. And it went all the way back to when I was about 15 years old, and in high school, they brought in guidance counselors and different people from different colleges, but they also brought in a guy from a company called Independent Electrical Contractors. And I didn't know what that was. I mean, you hear college every time you're in school, and they brought this guy in from the Independent Electrical Contractors. And in his presentation, talking about what do you want to do with your future, I mean, that's what guidance counselors are doing. He began to show on the presentation an actual P&L statement. And at the bottom of the P&L statement for his net profit, it showed over $1 million. And every other person was from a college, University of Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky University, all these different Cincinnati State. And they all showed how much money you had to spend to go to college. And the independent electrical contractor guy was a guy who didn't go to college, but was showing $1 million in profit. And as they went on through the university, I was like, hey, can we go back to the guy who is showing that he's making money and doesn't have to spend it? And that's what got me kind of all the way back then going, hey, there's an opportunity here that I don't have to spend money to make a good amount of money. It's a lot more physical is what I found out, but it's something that started me down a path to where I can actually start creating wealth at a younger age. And I wasn't even in that mindset at 15 years old. And I began to talk to that guy and say, okay, what do I have to do to get into these trades? And he allowed me to, that's going to be a problem. It allowed me to get into these trades, and I started going to vocational schools and finding out how to work for these companies in the summer times. And I started down the trades route and became an electrician. And then several years later, came to JAG. So my thought on college is I think it's a necessary evil for certain careers. I mean, our lawyers and doctors, we definitely don't want them to not know what they're doing.
You know, it's actually really interesting that you bring that up, because it was something that I had talked to a friend of mine that actually has more familiarity with the medical practices, that he was talking about the potential for there to actually be apprenticeship programs in the medical field for doctors.
That'd be cool.
And I think that could really be the future for a lot of different career paths. You know, without going way down a rabbit trail here talking about the medical world, obviously that's not what we're here to discuss, but it is interesting that with just a little bit of thought, you can start to picture how that could work, and you can think about how when people are actually seeing and practicing some of what their actual day-to-day jobs are going to be, the benefit is extremely high compared to sitting in a classroom and trying to imagine what you're going to use this information for.
It's almost getting hands-on training.
Yeah, because you're working with somebody who actually does it, who's actually been doing it.
We talked in Vistage, one of the people in our group said the one thing that they're kind of concerned about, because they kind of run like a trades-ish type of company. The thing that they were concerned about is not being able to get leaders, and they feel like they get better leaders from college just because they had to deal with all these things. And I began to talk about it because I feel like here at Jags Mechanical, we have excellent leaders, and most of us are. A person I talked to lately said, don't say uneducated, just say differently educated. And I thought, but most of our leaders here are all differently educated.
Graduated from UHK, University of Hard Knocks.
Yes. We all pay for education. Sometimes paying is called experience. And he was struggling with that. He feels like he has to go down that route. And I begin to explain to him how we kind of looked at Chick-fil-A and Disney. Have these really, everyone loves when you go to Disney World at how nice everyone is and they treat you better. Or if you go to Chick-fil-A and even Mike's Car Wash in our region, like they're always greeting you with a smile. They're always, and everyone's like, well, they must have a fantastic training program. And I know you've talked to the people from Chick-fil-A and we've talked to people from Disney and they're like, we just hire good people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really, that is what kind of has helped Jags Mechanical the way that it's going is we go start looking down that route.
That is something that I think a lot of people, when they see consistency, they think, oh, the training program must be so good. When I see consistency, I'm thinking somebody knows what they're looking for when they're hiring, because that makes all the difference. You don't have to train people to be friendly if you hire friendly people. You don't have to train people to be tenacious if you hire tenacious people. So yeah, one just to throw a couple of stats out here. I did some research today because we throw around a lot of numbers looking at more of the major schools, and I wanted to take a more conservative look at like community college and just see how it played out that way, because we know, you know, if you're going $400,000 into debt, you know, for a degree that doesn't pertain to anything in business or in leadership or, you know, a lawyer or a doctor or something that's going to make you significant income, that might be a bad idea. That makes a really obvious contrast. So I wanted to look at more of the conservative route of, you know, maybe spending $37,000 to $40,000 on your four-year college degree, which would be significantly less than I think most people spend on college. But you could do it. You could go to community college and you could get a degree in business for $40,000. But a couple of stats just to start out. And this is from the Education Data Initiative, that the average student loan debt for a four-year college degree in 2024 was $37,000 to $40,000. So, you know, maybe that's the average. That sounds a little low to me. But the other thing that I got from the Federal Reserve from 2022, that only 27% of college graduates are working in a field related to their degree. And wow. We all know people, you know. We all know somebody that has a degree and they're working in a completely unrelated field.
Not even, most of the time, it's not even anything to do with a college degree even being necessary as yeah. well.
But I thought that was staggering, 27%. So, you know, most of my friends that went to college didn't know what they wanted to do when they went to college, so that probably partially explains that. The average starting salary for new college grads in 2024 was $55,911. That's from NACE 2024. 44% of grads regret their major or feel their degree wasn't worth the cost. That's from CNBC and ZipRecruiter poll. So those are just some stats that I felt really highlighted how the university system is kind of failing young adults in America. And I know that's a pretty strong statement, but I mean, these numbers kind of speak for themselves. It's like, really? You know? Especially the one, 44% of grads, that's almost half of the people going to college end up regretting their major or feel their degree wasn't worth the cost. So we've talked about a couple things here. We've talked about the costs of college. We've talked about the results the college is getting. And we've talked about some of the reasons people go to college. I know you mentioned, you know, people looking for leaders. I hear this a lot. you hire people that went to college because they've proved that they can stick with something and do it. You do something hard. You know, that's something that you hear a lot. So I think that is something that as business owners, we need to kind of rethink that piece of it. It's like, just because somebody went to college doesn't necessarily mean they want to do hard things and they're willing to do them. It means they went somewhere and they paid a lot of money and they consistently went to class and got through it. And there's other ways to prove that. I was talking to a young lady who was telling me that her pastor recommended that she go to college because she wanted to work in the church. And I was like, what was the reason he said you should go to college? And she said, well, it's because it would prove that I can stick with something and do something hard. And I was like, so the education piece has nothing to do with what you would need to do at all. It's just that you could prove that you could stick with something and do something hard. And she's like, I guess. I'm like, okay. Is that worth, you know, is that worth $40K? I mean, can you do something hard that would prove that elsewhere? And I was like, what about, do they have any leaders now that didn't go to college? And she's like, oh yeah, there's somebody else that moved up and they hired her without even doing an interview because they had seen her work as a volunteer in the church and she didn't go to college. And I was like, well, that's the thing. It's like when we see evidence as leaders of hard work, we don't need a piece of paper, you know?
Yeah, that's the truth.
If you need a piece of paper, it's almost like, I don't want to say lazy, but it's almost like a lazy way to evaluate people. Because it's much harder to look at a resume and look into job history and try to see if they've done hard things. You have to do a lot more digging.
It's kind of funny because at our Vistage this week, the speaker, his name is Stephen Harrell, and he talked about how sometimes we get so caught up as leaders with resumes. And he was like, resumes are really good for bird cages. I got a kick out of that. And he was like, you really have to see what their track record actually physically was. Like, or did they stick with something? How do you know that? And he was talking about when you're bringing on someone, give them a task. If you're bringing on someone at a higher level, give them a task and have them schedule out and see how they handle that task before you hire them. And I thought that was a pretty interesting way of doing it, and have them schedule it out and give them a deadline, especially if it's going to be a higher level in your company. Because
yeah.
A resume doesn't really do anything. I mean, we could write anything on a piece of paper right now and turn it in as a resume. And are they can probably go check it, but how many actual business leaders or people interviewing actually go call every company on every resume to go find? We're not doing that. That's a lot of time and effort. So we take a lot of the resumes for things, and he said the best thing for that was a birdcage. And I thought that was a pretty funny answer.
That's definitely a really good tool for hiring. I know we've done stuff like that before with leadership positions. But I did want to go through and kind of compare, you know, the average person going into skilled trades. This example is specifically HVAC refrigeration techs. Average salary for starting out is in that same range as we saw with the college grad, 55K to 80K is actually what I got, and this was from industry data. And the experienced techs easily are topping 100K with incentives and overtime. And I know that's true at JAGS, but this is across the board. The thing is, starting out making 55K with zero student loan debt, that's the big difference here.
Yeah, you're starting off with a $55,000 positive instead of a $15,000 positive, which is a massive jump.
So you know how much I love ChatGPT and AI systems, so I started plugging in some numbers, and I asked the AI language model to compare a 22-year-old college graduate with 40K in debt, which we came with is the average, which I still think is pretty conservative. Starting salary 55K net worth of negative 40K at 22, basically, right? You're starting out with nothing, less than nothing. And then an HVAC tech who started at 19 years old with $0 in debt. They've got 3 years experience, and they're making $55K. And at that point, they have a net worth if they've been doing 401k investing. And I specifically use a 3% match because that's the generous thing that...
just about everyone does it at this point, yeah.
If you work with a good company, you can hopefully get a match, and 3% is pretty conservative.
And I think 13K even on an HVAC tech on net worth is even low, just because you're probably at 22, at least we know our guys, they're trying to buy a house by that point, or they own a vehicle or two. That those things are great to have as an asset, but...
For sure. So approximately $13,000 in net worth, and compared to a negative $40,000 net worth for the college graduate. Now, obviously, that's at 22, and, you know, I can hear the objections. Well, what about in the long run? You know, the how does it work out in the long run? The college grad's going to start investing. They're going to pay off their debt. So I went through and did the average return in the stock market of 10% year over year, accounting for compound interest. And I actually, from 22 on, I locked their salaries, which I don't think is accurate. I don't think that the college graduate is going to move up in salary at the same rate that the tech is, because the tech is going to learn skills. The college graduate is probably not going to return to school. They're probably not going to pursue furthering their education beyond that four-year degree. The technician is going to have to learn. They're going to have to do continuing ed. They're going to have to increase their knowledge, their certification level, which is going to impact how much they make significantly.
They're increasing their own value.
Yeah, absolutely. So I ran the numbers. Same salary. One of them started making money at 19, the technician, and I started him out at 19, $45,000. I think that, you know, for us at Jags Mechanical, that would be very low first year for an inexperienced person to make. But I'm saying a 19-year-old. You know, most of the people that we're hiring are not starting out at 19 either. So if you did start out at 19 and you apprenticed for 3 years, and by the time you're 22, you're making $55,000. That's this example anyway. This is all fictitious, but all the numbers will show a pretty interesting outcome here. So at 22, the tech's net worth is around 13K, and the money that he's not using to pay off his degree is going into a 401k with a match. So he actually, throughout his 20s, is able to invest into a 401k. So by age 30, and we have guys making this in their 20s. We have guys that made it through the training program that are making 100K plus in their 20s. But for this conservative example, I pushed it back to 30. So the tech is making $105,000 by the time he turns 30. The college graduate's making the exact same. But during his 20s, he had to pay down debt, and so he wasn't able to put 3% into his 401k. So he starts out at 30 putting money into his 401k. By the time these two are 40 years old, the tech has a net worth of $317,000. And the college graduate has a net worth of $115,000.
Wow.
So almost double in 10 years, from starting out young and investing money and making money without debt puts you so far ahead. And that's something that I wasn't thinking about when I was graduating high school. Most of the people that I talk to that are planning their careers are not thinking about that aspect of it. But the time value of money, it really has a long-term impact. And that's just 40. So it gets worse. It gets worse here. So I took it all the way out to 55. How does that 10-year head start affect the long-term retirement possibilities? You know, 55 would be pretty young to retire. But we have a tech here at 55 that's their net worth, assuming, like, this doesn't even take into account their house. They probably were able to buy a house earlier. They didn't have the debt. They, you know, there's other assets in here. So this is just 401k. We're just looking at the bare minimum that people could do to invest.
That's an easy thing to be disciplined on as well,
yeah,
because it's auto removed. So this isn't including all of your other things that, like you said, that we could be doing as a person, just creating our own incomes elsewhere or our own assets elsewhere. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't take into account the things that we encourage our techs to do or encourage them to learn about, which, you know, in addition to investing into their 401k, we talk about investing in real estate. We talk about, you know, incentives and becoming an entrepreneur, what we call somebody who's entrepreneurial inside of a company. So ignoring all that, this is just going to work every day, taking 3% out, putting it in, and getting a 3% match from your employer. So at 55 years old, college graduate, $849,000 net worth. He's paid off his college debt at this point. That's pretty good. That's more than most Americans at 55. So this guy did the right things, right? The technician who did the same right things but started at 19 making money with no debt is worth $1.7 million.
Wow.
Yeah. At 55. Becoming a millionaire at 55, well, actually, look in here on my sheet, he actually became a millionaire at 50, detected.
Wow.
And all he did was invest 3% of his salary into a 401k. He didn't do anything else. He didn't do any other investment planning. He didn't pick stocks. He didn't invest in real estate. And that's not even accounting for these guys' houses. So, you know, maybe at 55, the college graduate in this scenario is, you know, worth $1 million overall. Maybe.
Yeah.
I. Either way, both of these guys are doing good, but it's just a stark contrast between how much that initial starting out backwards on net worth affects your ability to earn income over the long term. And I don't think people think about that because they're like, oh, I'm going to make up for it because I'm going to make more money. Well, maybe if you're comparing yourself to, you know, working in a entry-level retail position or something like that and never moving up. But if you consider the trades, when you start to take the skilled labor aspect, especially now, right now, when so many people are retiring out of it, you know, we're seeing that across the whole country. So it was a very interesting comparison. It was something that, like, I knew on paper it would make sense if I looked at the expensive colleges. You know, if you're going to a big college,
go to MIT or Harvard. You're probably too smart for the trades anyway.
You know, maybe, you know, if you're one of the very few people making a very high salary, you know, it could pay off. It definitely could pay off. There's lots of people that become very wealthy that went to college. I'm not saying that. But it's just on a straight path for the average person. And I think the picture I painted on the college side is actually a little bit rosy for the average person's experience with college. Because making 100K by 30, I don't think is a consistent experience for Americans who went to college.
No, I was sitting at my athletic club the other day talking to someone, and there was a position opening up for like a $110,000 job, and he was like, I would quit everything I'm doing right now to go work for that company. That's so much money. And I was looking at him like, you're, you know, has a 4-year degree that he paid a pretty good price for. And I was like,
and how old is this guy?
He's probably pushing 41, 42 years old.
Yeah.
And he's to what I would consider a pretty smart person just by talking to him. I don't know the ins and outs, but I felt like he was pretty intelligent. But hearing that statement really brings alive not just looking at a spreadsheet. You're actually like, I know people that are not making that, and we have technicians at Jags Mechanical that are making that on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah. It's something that a lot of the people that have come to work at Jags and are successful here, a lot of them have said in the interview before they even knew what they were into here, that one of their biggest regrets was not getting into the trade sooner.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I've heard that several times in the interview process when we've been sitting with people.
And even with my background in food service, I think it would have been beneficial to have gotten into the trade sooner, you know, just because of the long-term impact of learning a trade and getting better at it, the value that you add to the to yourself.
And just like we talked about how some of these guys that are younger than 25 have their own houses, how much of the trade stuff do they use working on their own houses that they're saving money on, not having to go call a plumber because their hot water heater went out. They know how to go fix some small problems. Or I know you've just told me recently you've been replacing the floor in your own house, and that's something from being around Jags Mechanical that you feel the confidence that you can figure those types of things out.
Yeah, it really, and it opens other doors too. I have, you know, my real estate investments, and I just changed a bathtub drain on Monday, you know. But it's something that I would have had to pay a plumber to come out, cut out the drywall, and change the drain, and who knows how much that would have cost, you know.
Yeah.
But I went out and did it, you know, for the cost of the parts, you know, in my time. There's some other aspects that we should talk about with becoming a tech that a lot of people I don't think about. They have a different perspective on, and I think you could provide a different perspective on. One of the main objections I hear from people about going into the trades that are thinking about going to college for a different position, they're thinking, I want to work a 9-to-5, you know, job and sit in an air-conditioned office, you know, that they're like, I don't want to have to work so hard. That sounds like it'd be really hard work and, you know, physically. That sounds like it would be really hard for me, and I don't know if I want to do it. And I think there's, you and I both know there's some things being overlooked in that. So how would you, what would your perspective on that comment be?
There's definitely days where it's definitely more physical. I don't want to downplay it like it just doesn't exist, but it's a lot more perceived than it actually is. You do have to, like, especially in what we do, because we work a lot more in the food service industry because we're taking care of kitchens. Most of the coolers are on the ground, so yeah, you're getting on the ground, you're kneeling down and working on equipment, so that's about as physical as it gets. Anything that's too heavy to lift, and what we do, you're getting a crane for it, so you're not even picking it up. So I think a lot of that is a little bit a lot of people misperceive that being a super physical job. But like I said, it does happen. You might have to lift up something heavy here and there. You might be in a hot kitchen, you might be on a hot roof, or you're outside in the cold. But really, it's for such a small amount of time that it's really not that physically demanding. But I don't want to take away, because I talk to technicians all the time, like, and a lot of times whenever they are like, man, I had a really hard day, I'm like, okay, well, let's talk through what happened. Well, I had to get this large compressor onto the roof. And we walk through, like, okay, why did you lift it onto the roof? Why did we not? Is there not another way to do it? And we end up finding out, oh, they were just in a hurry and didn't take the time to get an easier way to do it to keep them from being using physical demands. Because it's a very mental more of what we do, just because you have to be able to problem solve. And what we do specifically about, like, controls and different types of chemicals and all that kind of thing. So if you're asking me, like, is it a super physical job? 90% of the time, no. It's not a super physical job. You have to be able to walk, and you have to be able to carry about 20 pounds from your truck to the inside. Then you can set your tool bag down, and you're good to go.
I do think... you know, one of the things that people also don't think about is, why are we pursuing a sedentary, you know, lifestyle and, like, work style? There's a lot of studies out there about health that say that it's better to be more physically active and to be getting up and down. And
get your blood flowing out just a little bit would be nice.
So I think it's kind of an interesting thing that people think that sitting in a office with maybe a window is like success, like that success. Because one of my favorite things when I was in the field was driving down the road going to a new place. You know, going.
That's why I even still now in what I do, I love going to meet all the people that we meet. I mean, this week alone, I probably met 50 new people that I've never met before. And I would have never had the opportunity to meet those people if I wasn't in the trades and I was stuck in an office. Now I might talk to them on a phone or even do a cold call or something like that if I was in the purely office side of, you know, a job that's similar. But the fact that I actually get to go meet physical people in a new place with new problems is really invigorating to me, and seeing there we get to provide a solution to these people that I've never met before and really get to hopefully wow them. And hey, we can figure these things out. And I know that, like, even our branch managers and our service managers feel the same way. Like, they're always excited about every day is a new exciting thing. I get to probably meet someone new, and then if I'm not meeting someone new, I'm dealing with someone who I've had a relationship with for a long time. That we're continually helping them and they're continually helping us, which is a very exciting thing in what we do, which is an aspect that I think it's looked over in the trades. You don't just go stand on a ladder all day long.
Yeah.
No, you're actually dealing and talking directly to people.
And your purpose is clear. You know what your purpose is. And I think a lot of times when you work in an office, it's like, what did I accomplish today? You know, you walk out of there.
That's a really good point. I know one of our service managers a couple years ago made a statement. He was like, you know, I really don't ever really want to go to the office space because there's not, he's like, if I do all the paperwork at the end of the day, the paperwork disappears. It's on a computer somewhere. He's like, I don't actually get to see the thing I fixed run.
Mm.
And he was like, that's one of the most exciting things. Like, that's one of the things that got him excited was I fixed this thing. If it's a dish machine, it's not leaking water anymore. I got rid of the leak and we're getting clean dishes out the other side of it. I can physically see what I actually did.
Yeah.
And there's something tangible that I can touch that I actually was a part of, which is a pretty cool thing to be able to say. And every person I ever talk to in the trades is always like, even carpenters, look what I built.
Yeah.
You can actually physically see what they built,
yeah.
Which is a really cool thing.
Yeah, I think the job satisfaction is higher because of that. Like, even the hard things we do, because, like, I do know that this job has moments every day that are hard, right? You know, every day has moments that are hard. But it's that job satisfaction at the end that really keeps you going and keeps you motivated. Because even on Monday when I changed that bathtub drain, the previous landlord, I think he knew he was selling it, and he had been mudding over the water stain on the drywall and just repainting it. And the tenant's like, well, I know there's a leak. Like, keeps coming down. And when I got in there and I changed that drain, you know, when I'm done, I can run the tub and there's no water. I could see the results of my hard work. And the tenant can see it. And the tenant can see, oh, somebody actually cares about this. Somebody actually fixed the issue. And that is the biggest thing in the trades is you're going to talk to, in our case, the restaurant manager and be like, hey, you know, you haven't had this item on your menu because your oven's been down and now your oven's working. You don't have to deal with angry customers because you don't have garlic bread.
Yeah, and when that garlic bread comes out, let me get a piece of it.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, people, the restaurant managers are, in, I would say, 80% of the cases, very happy when we leave. They're very happy. Their AC's working, or their cooler's working, or their oven's working, you know, whatever it is that we've been working on. And usually it's been a huge pain for them. So you're getting the job satisfaction from seeing the thing work, and then you're getting the gratitude in instant, you know.
It's kind of funny because my wife makes fun of me all the time because I have the job satisfaction thing down to a T. we'll be driving down the highway and I'm like, oh, I fixed this thing in this building. I fixed this thing in this building. And so now it's, you know, I've said it so many times that when we're driving down the highway, she's like, I already know you fixed the thing in this building. You fixed the thing in this building.
Absolutely.
But it's a pride thing and a job satisfaction thing. It's kind of funny because it's a real thing.
That's one of the things our founder talks about is, you know, whenever he was on a job, he's like, I would be working to fix something in a way that I could tell my grandchildren about, you know, fix it well enough that it lasts, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of mental obstacles in the trades that you got to get over.
That just reminded me of, you talked about, like, there are hard times in the day, but getting the fix always is what keeps driving, keeps you going. And I remember I was working at a restaurant, and I was under something, and a dumb screw wouldn't come out. And you're ready, like, you're trying to call all the centers to say all the inappropriate words because you're just frustrated. And you know, like, if I just get the screw out, I can fix this dang problem. So you sit there and you just keep at it and you keep the tenacious, like, action just going. And finally it comes out. And next thing you know, you're on your way home and you're like, oh, it really wasn't that bad. And it's working. But, you know, it feels like you're going to be there for hours and it's really only a few minutes of really hard, something that's really frustrating you. And next thing you know, you're on your way home.
It's a consistent fight against your brain.
Yes.
Because your brain tells you the sky is falling, but it's the one screw. You know? And it seems like that happens on almost every job. I don't know. Like, even the bathtub thing, the drain was seized together. You know how old bathtub drains, like, lock together over time?
Yeah.
And I had gotten enough torque on it that the pipe underneath actually was bending. It wasn't unscrewing. It was turning the whole pipe out. Like, it was bending it off, breaking it off. And then I ended up having to get my grinder out and cut the top piece up and pry it out with a screwdriver. And the whole time I'm having to grind it out, I'm thinking, man, this is going to take forever. This is such a hard job. And I got sparks flying and I'm making all this noise and I'm sweating and I'm in this nasty bathtub. And then you get it hammered out and you get it all put back together and it's beautiful and it's working and you're like, ah, this job wasn't that bad, you know?
You're like, yeah, halfway through the job, you're like, all right, someone needs to call an airstrike on this whole building.
And then it gets done and you're like, oh, yeah, that was pretty easy. You go home and it's like, how was your day? I was good. I had an easy job today.
Yeah. You know? All I had to do was replace this pipe. It was
fine. All I had to do. Famous words. All right. Well, that is all that we have today. But today we've talked about the difference between going to college and going into a skilled trade. We've looked at the average cost of college. We've looked at some of the ways that universities are failing young Americans. And we've looked at a different path. And I think it's a really good path for success. Next week, we're going to be back here talking with the founder. And we're going to be talking about how the trades.
Well, there's someone coming down the stairs now.
All right, we'll have to cut that out. We're going to be talking about how our founder got started in the trades and kind of his path to getting this company started and some of his vision for the future. So if you want to catch that and learn about what we're doing here at Jags Mechanical, you can follow our podcast. We look forward to having you show up to future episodes. So, awesome. We did episode one of the Wealthier, Smarter, or the Smarter and Wealthier podcast.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, thank you, Gabe. Appreciate you being here with us today. And we'll be back next week.
Sounds good.